Welcome to the Joe Thomas in the Morning podcast. I can say that with some authority, being Joe Thomas. What is about to follow are highlights strung together in context of this morning show on WCHV Radio in Charlottesville. You can stream it online anytime at WCHV.com or download the new smartphone app, which also gives you access to these podcasts. Who knows? That may be how you got here in the first place.
I'm CBS 19 Chief Meteorologist Travis Koshko for Seaville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Thank you, Travis. WCHV time is 7:07. Good morning. Who, me? And, you know, I love the smell of facepalm in the morning, and especially when I have to do it to myself. So I put the culpa in my mea this morning and embarrassedly reported that a website we refer to frequently on the program, the Market Urbanism Report, we talk about it a lot with Neil Williamson, great columns on there. I never realized that Scott Beyer was from Charlottesville. I mean, I was just reading his stuff, and maybe it's just because we never ran across articles where you reference it, but he does frequently, including this tour through major metropolitan areas. So I said, we've got to come in and talk a little bit about this, because as we head into primary season on the 11th, as well as general election season, the pinata outside of hate Trump is affordable housing. And we were just chronicling a story earlier last hour of an economic development director who's now facing a $17 million lawsuit and is in jail right now using affordable housing and solar energy as a way to bilk the, I think it's the Front Royal area out of a ton of money. Scott Byers in the studios with us this morning. Scott, thanks for coming by. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it and allowing me to embarrassedly admit that I didn't know you were from Charlottesville, but I appreciate what you write, because I think we too often in this discussion of living in cities, we've watched the percentage of Americans living in cities spiking to the point where there's concern that by the next 10 or 15 years, 80% of the population could live in cities per se. How we do that, what we make those cities into, I think sometimes we rely too much on elected officials to do it. But what have you seen? You just finished a how many year tour of the country, kind of examining how cities do things?
Sure. So I just finished a 3-year cross-country tour where I studied urban issues in the United States. So I was living in 30 cities for a month each and covering them at street level.
Mm.
And to get a sense of all the growth that is going into cities and the fact that our rural areas are declining and people are moving into cities, I think the conversation that I'm trying to have is, how can we let market outcomes, free market outcomes, dictate where people live and how they get around,
mm-hmm.
rather than having government bureaucrats do that instead? Because I think that there is more wisdom and feedback in the markets, and it's going to be, I think that markets are a better reflection of how people will actually want to locate in these cities, as opposed to the government steering mm-hmm. them into specific places.
A friend of mine, childhood friend of mine, was a writer for small town newspaper in northern New Jersey. It was one of his first jobs out of college. And what happened was somebody in Wall Street discovered this little New Jersey shipping town had all these wonderful brownstones that had been covered over with shag carpeting and wood paneling. But if you pulled all that up, there were these beautiful turn of the century, you know, row houses and beautiful townhomes. So the gentrification immediately hit the town. But that's an economic force. That's a bunch of folks saying, hey, we can be just on the other side of a tunnel, pay, you know, a quarter of what we would pay for housing somewhere else. Those kind of market forces get diminished the more the government gets involved, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I assume what you're describing is Hoboken.
Yes. As a matter of fact, how'd you know? Do you know John Derevlaney at all?
No, I don't. But it sounded like Hoboken fit that description.
Yep. No, that's exactly what it was. I didn't want to bore people with the deed. Yeah, but you know, but they gentrified when Wall Street sure. realized you could get all these inexpensive. But you see it here in Charlottesville with woolen mills,
sure,
the
yeah.
homes there, and they were just workforce housing when it was the mill. And now people are saying, oh, it's riverfront. It's kind of neat. And
right.
it goes up in price. But the same thing happens is the waves move in and out of other neighborhoods. There are other neighborhoods that started to see decline in population. And then if a market's allowed to work, you're always going to be able to find housing that's not that expensive if you're looking around, as long as the government stays out of it.
Certainly. And we have tangible proof in the country of the cities in the metro areas that are more permissive about building. There is more of this natural cycle
mm-hmm.
in the sense we actually have an economic term called filtering, which is the idea that if you build new housing, the wealthy people generally move into the new housing and the older housing stock filters down.
Mm.
So kind of what you're talking about where it filters down to lower income levels. So a class B or C property that was built in the 60s or 70s will gradually get affordable over time and be below the median home price of the metro area.
It's interesting because it was the expression the fixer-upper comes to mind. Scott Beyer, marketurbanismreport.com. We've got to run to a break. Can we hang on to you?
Sure.
Did you know that your computer doubles as a radio? Click to listen at WCHV.com.
I'm visiting with Scott Beyer of the Market Urbanism Report on Joe Thomas in the Morning. Scott, I really appreciate you coming down and visiting with us. So you did this 3-year tour of all these urban areas, and I've lived in a few. I've watched some really bad ones kind of at the tail end of where they were, Buffalo. And I kind of want your perspective, not only in what you found over the 3 years of living in these urban areas in terms of, you know, the access to affordable housing, you know, what's worked, what hasn't, but how does that translate back down to a small city like Charlottesville, the Albemarle County urbanized area, and what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong? I feel like we're like my cousin Vinny with their big Cadillac stuck in the mud of rural Georgia. So what should we be doing? What did you find?
Well, I think the big macro issue that I found is that there's a difference between elastic housing markets and inelastic.
Okay.
And so the elastic housing markets are willing to grow in the sense that when they have population growth, they allow more housing. So that's places like Houston, Dallas, and Atlanta would be the big three examples.
Now, Houston, if I'm not mistaken, has very open zoning.
It actually has no zoning.
Oh, all right. I was trying to be nice to him. I didn't want to trigger anyone listening and have them go drive off the road. But does that help their elasticity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not just the city of Houston, though. It's also the metro, like the suburbs, are very pro-growth as well. And so that has stabilized prices in those places. And in the inelastic metros like Portland and San Francisco and New York City, D.C., they don't build a lot of new housing, or at least not enough to satisfy their population demand. So they have crazy home prices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to bring it to Charlottesville's level, I view Charlottesville as like a smaller version of San Francisco when it comes to the housing market.
And there's no poop on the streets yet.
Not yet. Hopefully not. But yeah, it's just we don't allow a whole lot of home construction here, and we have a lot of regulations and a lot of entrenched NIMBYism mm-hmm. within the political establishment and the body politic here.
Adams wrote early on in the Enlightenment period in the late 18th century a lot of discussion as to how to free societies fail, and he chronicled a lot of the city-states having issues with, as time went on, fewer and fewer people showed up in the assemblies, leaving, you know, the small activist class And I've used the phrase the tail wags the dog. But if you know there's going to be 20% voter turnout and 10% of the population is the activist class, well, you know, that wins your election. If you see them at the, you know, jumping up and down on the furniture at your city council meeting saying, you know, we don't want to, I was telling my wife this, it's like they say we don't want apartment houses, but we want affordable housing. It's like they're just not hearing each other say these things.
Yeah, and I think there's tangible examples of that happening in Charlottesville where we always need to have community input, and we always have to have community input from very specific constituencies mm-hmm. that tend to be obstructionist. And so it's like if you're going to have all those barriers to getting new housing built, then the final outcome is that we're going to have escalating home prices, and that's exactly what we have in Charlottesville.
And it benefits the tax collections anyway, because is the, you know, is it, and I was told once that I was oversimplifying it because I compared the home stock prices to any other kind of stock. It's a commodity. And if you have, you don't have to be named De Beers to understand if you could restrict how much of a commodity is on the marketplace, what is out there is going to go up in price.
Right.
Is it oversimplifying it to say that?
No, I'd say that's about dead on, and I don't view that as a good thing, by the way.
No.
I don't think we should be viewing homeownership as this asset that's always going to appreciate and appreciate and appreciate, because that runs counter to the goals of having affordable housing for people.
Exactly.
And so I think this is something, this is a dynamic, an economic dynamic that I think a lot of people in Charlottesville do not understand, which is that when you resist new housing from getting built, It causes existing homeowners to have their assets really appreciate and, mm-hmm. and build their wealth, but it comes at the expense of other people who are trying to enter the home buying market.
Mm-hmm. Well, we see, you know, Ridge Schuyler, when he did the Orange Dot Project report, I don't know if you've ever seen it, he did it with the Chamber of Commerce. And now they've built it into this Network to Work initiative. But one of the first things he did is he says, let's figure out where the poverty is.
Sure.
And I think as conservatives, you know, we often forget that when we talk about open economics and everything, is that there are people who are really poor right now. And we need to make sure that that's addressed while we're working on a more open housing market, more vibrant economy. But 25%, one out of four residents in Charlottesville can't find a job that helps them pay for what they do. So it's not just a restricting of housing markets, but also the job markets and what's available for commercial development beyond retail, which is kind of an easy fix. But you know, if one out of every four of us can't afford to buy anything at the store, how much retail can you have? So that's got to be part of it, doesn't it, Scott?
Yeah, I suppose. And that's not really something, the whole wage growth aspect is not something I've studied a whole lot.
But the access to the places to build businesses is part of it. I mean, we watch supervisors come and go with their heads flattened out from hitting them against the wall, trying to get pad-ready sites for development to be ready so that a business that wants to open here isn't looking at 12 months worth of just back and forth with architects and lawyers and everything else.
Right. I think that's a good point. I think zoning and land use really does come into play there. I mean, if you look at the county zoning, it's like very little of the county can even have any economic development.
Yeah,
it's not even zoned for that.
95% is off, yeah.
And so, I mean, to your point, it's like if you're a business trying to open in Charlottesville or Albemarle, you're going to have a tough time, and mm-hmm. that's going to have a spiral effect on the lower class.
So what questions should we be asking the city council candidates and the board of supervisor candidates and the House of Delegates candidates that would help this along? Because, you know, some of them we have Republicans versus Democrats. Some of them it's just all Democrats and varying shades of blue. So what questions should we be asking, and what answers should we be looking for?
The question I would be asking the city council, since we're coming up to an election now, mm-hmm. is why do we not have a comprehensive zoning rewrite that upzones much of the city, allows mid to high rise development downtown, and maybe like a slight upzoning in the single family neighborhoods to duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we not have that conversation, and And, or we've had the conversation, but why has it not happened?
Right.
And will it happen when you're in office?
Yeah. Okay. That's a great question. Well, we'll continue to ask that of folks. Scott, it is great to run into you. How long are you in Charlottesville for?
Probably another month, and then I moved to New York City.
Right. Well, I grew up there, and boy, that's the case. You know, and what people forget is New York City is a great example of, you know, maybe they go through waves of some city, you know, management trying really hard to organize it, and then the city just says, no, we're doing our own thing. Catch us if you can. And eventually it kind of goes in waves. So it's an interesting amalgam of that. I appreciate it, Scott. And again, it's marketurbanismreport.com. And we'll talk to you again very soon.
All right. Thank you so much.